Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Dave Kidd of The Sun and Tom Hopkinson of The Sunday Mirror. Result just in, Manchester City 3, the rest 0. An unprecedented treble in the men's game at least. So why does it feel so underwhelming? City deserve respect, yet their dominance is corrosive and divisive. A case of being too good for the common good, Dave?
I think when I was watching that cup final on Saturday, you started feeling that way particularly. I mean, Watford are a decent side and City absolutely eviscerated them. It was, you know, embarrassing in the second half. It was slightly sad to see. But I would balance that by saying we've just had, you know, the tightest and best, most compelling title race in the Premier League era. I think, you know, Liverpool have been very, very close to City. You know, as close as you can be, the best runners-up in the history of English football. Where the rest are compared to City and Liverpool is slightly more of a problem. They're an awful long way back and you cannot see anyone else challenging those two next season. But I don't think Liverpool are going anywhere. I think Liverpool are a team built to last. So, I mean, there are an awful lot of, you know, issues regarding City's finances, which, you know, may end up tainting their achievements if they are found guilty of what they've been accused of.
Which they deny, by the way.
Absolutely. At this moment, I think it's slightly too early to say, you know, it's become Scotland, it's become Celtic, they're going to win everything every year. I don't think that's necessarily the case. They've won 5 of the last 6 domestic trophies. I'd also argue that, you know, unless and until they win a Champions League, I'm not sure if you can even call them the greatest team of this Premier League era.
Well, that is the point, isn't it? Everything is now geared to strengthening for next season at City because of that Champions League, you know, priority now. Were we seeing the sort of first signs of the future, though, at Wembley, do you think?
I don't know if they're the first signs of the future. I think very much the present, actually, Mike. We've seen City 198 points in the Premier League over the last two seasons, which is a phenomenal achievement. And we've seen them push sides to one side as if they're not even there. And as Dave said, you know, this Watford team are a good side, a decent strength Premier League side, and they just made them look without even their full strength 11 starting. I mean, when you look at Aguero, De Bruyne, Sane on the bench, I mean, it's quite incredible what they did. I think what we will see in the next couple of years is the top six. I know Dave said, you know, Liverpool and City are a long way ahead of everyone else, but I think the amount of money that the top six have got now between them and the way in which they're all going to be able to strengthen in the next 2, 3, 4 transfer windows, we're going to see those sorts of results against the other 14 sides in the Premier League on a regular occurrence. And I think it will only detract from the spectacle in the next decade.
Do you think we're getting to the stage where people are going to begin to say, oh, look, just the top six, just let them go away. Let's let them go and form their own Super League and we'll get on with what we perceive to be a much more fair and important competition.
There's an argument for it, isn't there? I must admit, when that has been mooted in the past and when they've started having their conversations about the possibility of it happening, you do think, well, would English football be that bad a place without them? You know, there's an awful lot of big, very well-supported clubs that would be left behind and it would be a different sort of spectacle. I don't think it would be the end of English football. I don't think it would be a crippling blow a lot of people think it was if the likes of Leeds, Newcastle, Aston Villa, Sheffield Wednesday, all those sort of clubs were left.
You'd have to look at the four teams who were in the playoffs in the Championship.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Whichever one of them had gone up or does come up, you've still got big crowds and
very
big clubs.
So indeed, there's a huge amount of depth in the English game. I don't think it would be crippled without the top six. I don't think that will happen, though. But I think unfortunately, we will see the Champions League become more of a closed shop. That is what they're moving towards. And that's a real shame. You know, I think we've seen all five of the top European leagues being, you know, the title being retained in each league, and it's becoming more and more self-perpetuating. But they're going to make sure they're going to lock themselves in, I think, the big clubs.
Yeah, because if you look at it across Europe, Juventus have just won their eighth successive Serie A title. Mm. Bayern have just won their sixth successive Bundesliga title. Yet Allegri's gone, and there's quite a lot of talk that Kovac might go as well. Is that modern football writ large?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I think there's only so long that managers can expend the mental energy. You know, there's still an awful lot of pressure on managers like Allegri. You know, you have to win the league as it's deemed failure, and you have to win the big trophies as well. So I can understand, you know, the cycles that the top managers work in. I mean, you only have to look at the mental toughness that Guardiola's been through, whether it was at Barcelona. He needed a year out after Barcelona, didn't he? On to Bayern Munich, now on to Manchester City. And, you know, it's just a relentless pursuit of glory. And even though they're given at the big clubs the finances, the resources and the support to go out and sign the best players, which obviously makes the job easier, you still have to deliver. And I don't think we should take anything away from the managers, and we shouldn't take anything away from Guardiola for what he's achieved as well, even as we've said at the top of the show, despite everything that's going on in the background at City.
Mm. Put Pep's achievements into perspective, if you could, please, Dave. Because there was a cameo just after the game where he was berating Sterling.
Yeah.
Now, part of me thought, well, that's the driven man, and part of me thought, you're showboating.
For the cameo, yes. That's not to be disrespectful towards him generally. But
no, again, so put what he's done and who he is into some sort of context, please.
I think he makes individual footballers an awful lot better. And there aren't an awful lot, you know, there's quite a lot of managers at the top level who don't necessarily do that. I think he improves players. When you speak to players like Sterling, Walker, players like that, that they really feel that their games on a technical level have come on so much. Sterling's a great example of that. You know, he always had talent, but the end product wasn't there. Which you've seen him become an outstanding world-class footballer under Guardiola. I think, as Tom was saying, Guardiola has to win the league every year for it not to, you know, and he's had that at Barcelona, at Bayern, and at City. Always had that pressure on him to win the league every single season, and particularly this year, there's so little margin for error, isn't there? You know, if they'd taken 2 points less. If those couple of goal line technology decisions, you know, the one at Burnley and the one in the Man City Liverpool game had gone against City, not for them, then they wouldn't have won the title. He'd been deemed a failure now with a couple of domestic cups. But the flip side with Guardiola is that he has, and he hates it being mentioned, but it's certainly true, is that he's failed over the last 8 years in the Champions League with very strong teams. He hasn't reached a final. Mm. And he's made strange decisions in the last couple of, you know, in those all-English games against Spurs this year and Liverpool last year. He's made very strange selections. He's almost been overthinking things. And it seems as if the business end of the Champions League is starting to get to him. He knows there's an issue and a bit of a question mark over him. And it seems to make him go slightly, his thinking go slightly wonky, I think.
That's why I do wonder if Klopp had been in charge at Manchester City and given the money. I know Klopp's had a lot of money to spend at Liverpool, but if he'd been given the money that Guardiola has had to spend at Manchester City, I think we'd be fating him in the same way. You know, I think he would have been able to deliver. And I think Pochettino as well, given Manchester City's resources, I think he would do the job that Guardiola's done. So whilst we should applaud Guardiola for everything that he's achieved with Manchester City, for the wonderful football that it's been a privilege for us to cover, for fans of the Premier League to sit and watch over the last couple of years, I think we should also, you know, acknowledge the fact that he has been given all this money and that there are other managers in the league who, given the chance, would probably do as good a job.
Yeah. Talking of money, we seem to do nothing but talk about money. There will be strengthening at City. Already talk of Maguire potentially going there. Who do you expect to see? What are the names out there?
Yeah, I mean, Maguire is an interesting one, isn't it? They're talking about a club record fee for him. I think he'd be a good sign-in. I mean, when you look at the facts, They'd be bringing him in effectively to replace Vincent Kompany, but they've already got Laporte there. They've already got John Stones there. I know Stones has had a difficult season this year, but I think given his age, you can expect him to come good again. So, you know, it would be a very positive thing for English football as well if they had two good, solid English centre-halves playing for City. I think the midfield, Fernandinho, it's no secret, is it, that they've been looking for somebody to come in and take over from him in the long term. Left-back, I mean, Zinchenko's really come on as well, hasn't he? Obviously, the concerns over Mendy's injury record, but I mean, it's frightening to think that, you know, that they are going to bring that team up to another level. I mean, I think he talked a couple of weeks ago, didn't he, Guardiola, about the set pieces. He wasn't very happy with them at set pieces, and talked about him being as tall as anyone, if not taller than anyone in the squad. So I mean, if you can imagine this Manchester City side, not just with the aesthetically pleasing nature of it, but with a bit of more brutality in it as well, a bit more size, then it would be a frightening prospect for anyone.
I think one of the strangest sort of reactions has actually come from the City fans. I'm not talking about all of them, but individually, there seems to be expressions of anger, you know, either through social media, which we all know the faults of, but, you know, even on Saturday at the press box, you had, you know, a guy coming in.
Yeah.
And basically abusing the writers for supposed bias towards Liverpool and Mo Salah. Isn't that strange?
It is strange. And you get hotheads amongst, you know, the supports of all major clubs, and City and Liverpool, both, I think, slightly worse than average on that score. It's a weird one, because you'd think if your team had been taken over by, you know, an Abu Dhabi royal family, you had the best manager in the world, and your team was playing the best football and getting the best results in the history of English football, you might be quite happy about it and enjoy it and just, you know, quite enjoy the ride. But rather than it making you angry that people point out the obvious fact that it's been funded, you know, Manchester City haven't just sort of magicked their way up from the team who played at Main Road with inflatable bananas on the kippax and Imre Vardy playing up forward. You know, it's been done because the Abu Dhabi royal family took over the club, and that's how it's happened. And for people not to mention that would be weird. So, I don't know. I mean, it's the modern age, isn't it, in every walk of life, really, that people get extremely angry about things, particularly about the media saying obvious things. That seems to anger people in every way.
I think what's strange about it as well, though, you know, we've been saying for the last 2 years Manchester City are a very, very good, excellent, wonderful, beautiful football side. So, you know, newspapers are still a business. We still have to come up with new content. We still have to push things forward, even though we're reporting, obviously reporting on something as well. And the fact of the matter is that Liverpool, look, City's achievements this year, again, it's not to detract from that, because winning three trophies has been fantastic. But Liverpool has been a great story because it's almost new in the fact that Van Dijk and Alisson have helped push them on to that next level. And they've closed the gap from 25 points on City to 24 points. So it's only right that whilst, you know, acknowledging what City have achieved, that we say Liverpool have done very well as well. And I think a lot of this came up because the Times put something on the front of their pullout, and it was because
they had a Liverpool spread on the, or Liverpool on the front.
That's right.
When City on the time that City were champions.
City had been in the back, on the back page.
It was an editorial decision, wasn't it?
In newspaper terms, we know, in newspaper production terms, that's not an unusual decision. If you've got Man City on the back page and then you've got to pull out Liverpool on the front, it's a perfectly reasonable editorial decision to make. Also, the fact is that Liverpool, Manchester United and Arsenal all have a far bigger, you know, nationally and globally, bigger reach than Manchester City do. That, you know, for everything they've done, the sort of the global brand, and certainly in terms of, you know, the British newspaper reading audience, they haven't got that pull that Liverpool, United and Arsenal have, because they've built up that level of support and interest over 60, 70, 80 years, and City have been, you know...
And it will come. If City keep dominating, it will come. It all works in cycles, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But you know, I remember going away to Thailand a few years ago, and, you know, you walk into the Bangkok airport and the only shirts you see, Manchester United, Arsenal, Leicester, of course. But it's because City, as Dave said, you know, they're still growing that presence, and it's this generation of children around the world now who are going to be looking at English football and saying, right, I'm going to pick a club, I'm going to choose Manchester City because they're successful. So you know, in five, 10 years' time, when they're the people who are hopefully still buying newspapers but taking the material online, then that will probably change. But, yeah, absolutely right.
One great old club, Wolves, are actually going to be in Europe because of that win at Wembley. Their model is an interesting one in as much as that it's agent-driven and also supported or underpinned by, you know, Chinese commerce and cash. Is that the type of model which can force a club into the top four, or do you need to be really almost to have your own state?
I think it is the type of model that can ultimately push a team or club into the top four. I think it'll take a lot of work. I think you only have to look at the way City have built it. You know, it's not just about the manager and the players. The infrastructure that Manchester City put into place, Wolves have got to go about doing something very, very similar and making sure, you know, if you want to get into those upper echelons, into the Champions League rather than the Europa League, you've got the director of football in place, someone who can act like Chicky Bergeristein, who's got the contacts in worldwide football to bring in a manager who'll take you there. I mean, whether Nuno is the man to take Wolves into the Champions League, he's certainly shown that he's a very good manager. But yeah, I think ultimately that they there's nothing to say that they couldn't get there in the next 3 or 4 years if they keep building. I mean, they've clearly got some very, very good contacts, but there's only so long that bringing the best young players from Portugal over will get you there. You know, they do have to start bringing in players to complement them now as well.
Brighton, it seems ages ago now, but you know they were the team who lost to give City the title. They got rid of Chris Hughton in controversial circumstances almost immediately. Graham Potter's now gone in there from Swansea. That good appointment?
I think it's an interesting one, certainly. It's one you'd like to see succeed, despite however, I think anyone who'd ever come across Chris Hughton would have been gutted for him. And even if you understood how bad the form had been over the previous few months, I felt he deserved the chance to have a bit of money to spend and try and take things more expansively himself. But, you know, I understand why they've done it.
He got a huge ovation from his peers, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
In the LMA dinner.
Everyone knows what a good job he's done there, and at Newcastle, and at Norwich, and I think he's been harshly sacked now on three occasions, actually. But Potter is an interesting guy. He's probably going to play more expansive football there. His background's almost not his playing style, but his background reminds you a bit of Hodgson. He's gone. He wasn't a name, and he went to Sweden and did very, very well in Sweden. And he's now, you know, obviously, where he went around the world really before he came into English club football in latter years. But Potter, you know, it's good to see Englishmen going abroad, learning their trade abroad, because there are, you know, it's a way of doing it for an English guys particularly who haven't got a stellar name as a player. It's not easy to force your way into management, however gifted you are as a coach, if you haven't got that name. He's gone as Ostersunds in Sweden, made his name there, done well at Swansea given the financial constraints he was under this year, and I impressed a lot of people in and around Swansea. So, yeah, you'd like to see him succeed at Brighton. It's an unforgiving league, though, I would say that.
Yeah. Do you think there'll be any other managerial appointments, Tom, over the summer?
I don't know whether there will. I mean, Leicester have just taken a new manager. United aren't going to replace Solskjaer this summer, I wouldn't have thought. I think Pep's fairly safe at City, isn't he? Klopp's probably just about going to make it through the summer at Liverpool. So, yeah, I don't expect there to be too much more going on. I think Graham Potter's a good signing for Brighton. I covered a couple of Brighton games towards the end of last season, and the atmosphere wasn't great down there, particularly the thumping against Bournemouth. Fans were starting to turn on Hughton a bit, and I think, you know, when you look at the life cycle of managers in the modern game, you know, yes, he's maybe some people would argue that he's been harshly treated, but he's had a good run down there, 3-4 years, hasn't he? And so, you know, I think he'll hopefully go away, have a holiday, dust himself down and come back and do, as Dave says, what he's done at every club, which is leave them in a better position than they were when he arrived. And
I must admit, if I was at West Brom, I'd be stampeding.
Whoever goes for him will get a very good manager.
Yeah. In terms of managerial changes, I think Chelsea's the one that's interesting in that we were pretty convinced Sarri was going to go. Now he's got what is on paper a pretty successful season in terms of finishing third, getting to a Europa final, getting to a League Cup final, not bad. But at the same time, the fans aren't having him at all, and there's the intriguing prospect of Lampard. So that's one that could happen.
It's going nowhere.
Says the Derby correspondent. Yeah. What about Allegri there?
Allegri's interesting, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen him.
He did say, I'm not going to have a year off.
Yeah, I mean, Allegri for Chelsea is a possibility as well. I wonder how... Because that's the only, in terms of English football, that's the only one that you could see coming up in the top six. And Allegri's not going to look below that. So, it would have to be Chelsea. And then, you know, if a transfer ban is in place, I know they've got a lot of options with young players and the players they've had on loan. So it's not, you know, it's not as bad as all that. You've still got quite a decent pool of players to choose from. But is a sort of A-list manager going to want to come in with his hands tied behind his back in terms of, possible recruitments? I'm not entirely sure.
I wonder what another is. You know, they've gone Italian with the last two managers, two very different styles as well, and you're bringing in another Italian manager with a different style again. And I just wonder whether that's, you know, whether that would work for Chelsea.
My argument would be that I think he's earned a second season. I'm not his greatest fan, and I understand why the supporters are a bit frustrated, but I do think he's done well enough to
agree.
Okay. To deserve a second.
So we've come to the end of the domestic season, at least. A few sort of awards, sometimes not serious, but let's look at Player of the Year. I'll start the ball rolling by suggesting Vinnie Kompany. I thought that on Saturday night. On Sunday morning, of course, he announced he was going to Anderlecht as player manager. There's something about him, there's a dignity about him, and you look at him and think he's going to do something quite special and significant in the game beyond playing. You know, I could see him, for instance, being a PFA chief executive. You know, who knows, he might even be worth the sort of money they're paying Gordon Taylor. What do you think of him?
Kompany, absolutely. I totally agree with everything you said. I think he has got it'd be interesting to see how he does in management, but also you could see certainly beyond that as well in administration. He's a very, very bright and articulate and just likeable guy. And I think City, you're talking about whether City are likeable or not. Vinnie Kompany is very, very likeable. I don't think many people have a bad word to say about him. And I just, although he's not, obviously he's Belgian, you know, he almost seemed like an honorary Manc, didn't he? And they've always been, you know, and they're now obviously looking to get homegrown player through. Foden's the one who's been in and around, but hasn't quite broke the door down this season. So, you know, I always felt he was a link to the old Man City almost. I know he was only there a few weeks before the Abu Dhabi takeover, but he always felt like a link to the past somehow, and he understood the club, the old city, really. A terrific man. My personal player of the year, you know, I would always say Sterling, but I think the intriguing one is Bernardo Silva. That hasn't, you know, people saying Sterling or Van Dijk. Sterling, Silva's been outstanding this year, and also, by the way, a really, really likeable guy as well, Bernardo Silva. So I think, and I thought his pass for the second goal in the cup final was the greatest moment of skill in that match as well. So
I think Kompany would be wasted if he went into an administration role. I think he's just management material. You know, he's played the game at the highest level. He's very eloquent. Comes across very well, as Dave said. You know, he's been the face of Manchester City off the field as well as on it for such a long time now. But what I've liked about him is when he's had some terrible injuries and shown this incredible mental strength to come back from them. But he didn't waste his time out injured either. You know, I think he did the business degree, didn't he, the MBA, and I cover a bit of boxing as well over the years, and I often see him at fights. You know, he's there, and he's whenever you see fans mingling with him, always very happy to stop and have a chat and have a photograph. So I hope things work out for him on the management front, because I think long-term, it wouldn't surprise me if we didn't see him back at City as one of Guardiola's successors somewhere down the line. But I agree with Dave. I think if we're going to go for a Premier League Player of the Year, my vote for the Football Writers one was Raheem Sterling. I think he just... it was neck and neck between him and Virgil van Dijk. Both had fantastic seasons. Van Dijk, of course, could end up as a Champions League winner. But I just always, when it comes to these awards, I just think, you know, who would get me off my seat the most? And I think someone like Sterling, you know, the attacking player, is always more likely to make me jump up and get me excited yeah. about something I've seen from them than
Sterling's wider relevance as well in terms of what you said about racism. Racism outstanding for me.
Absolutely.
Well, that young player of the year, I look at Jadon Sancho. Okay, Dortmund didn't quite win the Bundesliga, finished 2 points short. He scored again in the final game. You know, to me, he's the poster boy of, you know, young English talent going abroad and fulfilling themselves, having the courage to test himself. Mm-hmm. Have Manchester United blown it with him?
It looks like it, doesn't it? Yeah, and you sort of wonder why a player, you know, as good as Sancho with his profile, and he's, you know, he's proved himself even at 19 to be, you know, a real outstanding talent. You know, United now are not the proposition they were. I mean, they're not in the Champions League. It's a mess. The manager hasn't got any great managerial pedigree. We know what a legend he was as a player there. But, you know, if you're a young player and you've got a choice of four or five top European clubs, including United, I think they'd be well down the list, wouldn't they? I don't think they have that pulling power anymore.
And that's why this is what people all refer to as the United tax, because they are going to have to spend so big on wages now to entice players. And that, I mean, that's been the case for a few years now, that it's probably lost a little bit of the lustre. And that's why you're
Sanchez
hearing,
is on half a million a week, allegedly.
Yeah. So in that context, then, OK, the tongue's slightly in the cheek here, is Jose Mourinho manager of the year. You know, he had the right idea, probably went the wrong way about attitudes.
I think everything we've seen at United in the last few games of the season, last 10 or so games of the season, has proved that Mourinho was actually right. You know, look, Jose Mourinho is whatever you think of him, and I've always had a bit of a soft spot for him because I've covered a lot of press conferences with him, and you know, what I like about him, some managers, they'll give you the big smile for the cameras and they're not always the same off camera as they are on it, whereas Mourinho, it's just the same. Whatever mood he's in, you're going to see it. And I respect him for that. Things went south at Manchester United, went very sour for him, and he probably didn't handle the players in the right way towards the end of it. But I don't think they've shown that they deserved anything else from them. And, you know, Solskjaer came in and he gave them that little bit of a lift and they turned it on. And then the second he got the job, they turned it off again. And I think it just proves that what Mourinho was saying was right. And why you wouldn't back a man like Mourinho in the transfer market, you know, he wanted another defender. I know it's easy to say, look, we've given you lots of money for a defender, but it's Jose Mourinho. He's won everything there is to win. You back him, you stick with him and let him reinvent the club.
Mm. Where do you see him turning up at, Dave?
Probably PSG, I guess. That seems like the next port of call, to be honest.
Back at Chelsea.
A few people have mentioned it recently that, you know, he's been doing a lot of punditry and he seems to have, you know, cheered up from a little bit of a rest, and he sort of seems to have his old exuberance.
But they all do that, don't they? They all do that. They look 10 years younger. The moment they get in a job,
he used to come into the... I mean, you've been there as well. He'd come into Chelsea at the start of the season at his press conference. He'd had the tan, the hair would be caught, he'd all smiles within about 3 weeks. Yeah. He wasn't talking to us.
Yeah. When you've got... we're talking about liabilities. Now, there are a lot of players that may not have liabilities. Liability of the year. I'll throw Mustafi into that mix because he seems to be just a walking disaster area for Arsenal. Any others?
I'm going to go for Aboubakar Kamara at Fulham because, you know, I think there were three incidents within the space of a week or two where he grabbed a penalty off the designated penalty taker, Alexander Mitrovic, and then missed the penalty. At which point Claudio Ranieri, the manager of Fulham, then said he would kill him. He then had a fight or a heated argument with Alexander Mitrovic during a yoga session in which he had those be pulled apart, and then he was arrested for a fracas with a security guard at the training ground a few days after that, and was then carted off to Turkey on loan. So I think you know, you'd have to go some to beat Kamara actually, this year.
You want to try?
No, man, it's a dreadfully boring answer now. I mean, Fred was the one for me on the field, you know, for Manchester United. Fourth most expensive signing in the club's history, £53 million, I think it was. And he just hasn't even looked like he'd be decent Terrible. At Salford, let alone at Manchester United. So, yeah, liability on the pitch for me.
What about anti-hero of the year? You know, I love the sort of guys who just niggle and wind people up. Now, Ashley Barnes for me at Burnley is like that.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
I think, despite the result of the cup final, Troy Deeney has definitely got that about him. Yeah. Other fans hate him, because he is a wind up man, and also the way he. I mean, I think it was last season when he came up with particularly his rant about Arsenal, and it was actually everything he said was, you know, as a sort of critique of Wenger's latter years was absolutely spot on, and just came out and said it, didn't he? I think it gets up a lot of other footballers' noses. What he says, but I love it personally. You know, he's warts and all. The way he plays the game, the way he talks about it, he's a throwback, and I'd have Deeney as an anti-hero of the year.
Yeah,
mine's an old familiar candidate with Luis Suarez. I mean, I know Liverpool fans won't like it, but in that first leg of the Champions League game, when you know they went in and everything they've defended him for over the years, and next thing he scores a goal and celebrates wildly in front of him, in front of them. I think, you know, if you're anyone who's not a Liverpool fan will have afforded themselves a little giggle at everything that was going on there. But you know, I love to watch him play because he's just spiteful. He's horrible. He's nasty. And he's you know, it's everything that's like he's the pantomime villain, isn't he? And yet an incredibly talented footballer as well. But it was very nice to see him get his comeuppance at the end with Liverpool winning and going through.
Because I'll link that into the miss of the year for me. It was Ousmane Dembele, you know, last kick of that first leg of the semi final against Liverpool. 4-0 is a completely different ball game. Was that the miss of the year?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. I actually think, given how good City have been domestically, and you sort of feel that there wasn't there's not been an outstanding team on the continent this year, you know, Barca, Bayern, Real Madrid, Juve, none of them have been sort of absolutely outstanding. I felt this was the year City should have won the Champions League, despite everything they've done domestically. So therefore, I think if Aguero scores the penalty at White Hart Lane in the first leg of that quarter-final, I think it ends up being a very different tie. And so that was significant because I think City could easily have won everything. Like the quadruple, I think, was there for the taking this year.
Mm. Tom?
Yeah, I'd agree with Dave. That miss from Aguero was right up.
It was a save, wasn't it?
Any chance for Sergio Aguero is you know,
it wasn't a great pen.
Yeah. Now, Tom, you know your way around the transfer market, and you've mentioned Fred already. In terms of the worst transfers of the season, Sanchez has got to be up there, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Sanchez was horrendous. I mean, you take away the fact that there was no fee, though. I know he's obviously the huge wages that he's on, £500,000 plus a week. You'd struggle to go some, but I'm going to go for Anguissa at Fulham, best part of £30 million, and just absolutely dreadful. You know, I think when Fulham spent that money, £100 million at the start of the year, everyone looked at that and said, you know what, good to see a club coming up. They're having a go. It might take them a few weeks to bring these players together, bring this team together, because it does when you sign that many players. But yeah, he's just he's a unmitigated disaster. Too strong, kiddo. As
he's got slightly better towards the end of the season, but he was shocking as a record signing. Shocking. Seri, who was the other player for big money, was very,
he was
very
30 as well, wasn't
he? Yeah, something like that. And Mawson, £20 million, hardly kicked a ball, really. So there's been so many disastrous signings at Fulham. I think Fulham and Man United, between them on their different levels, the recruitment of both of those clubs has been appalling.
Yeah, and recruitment's key, isn't it, these days?
Massive. Yeah, absolutely massive. It'll be interesting, I think, when you speak to one or two people around the transfer market in the last couple of weeks. They're not sure just how much money will be spent by the English clubs this year. I don't know whether there's a huge appetite. I mean, Chelsea is going to be the interesting one. I mean, of course, you know, if the ban remains in place and they lose Eden Hazard, then obviously there's going to be nothing they can do about it. They've already got Pulisic coming in, of course. But if they do end up taking this appeal. I know they've taken it to the Court of Arbitration, but if it ends up kicking in and they have got money to spend, then that will be where it's interesting. But I think United as well, the watching Paul Pogba's situation, that'll be quite key for them. I don't think there's any appetite from Ed Woodward to let him go, because obviously if you do, whatever you think about Pogba, and I'm not his biggest fan because of the way he turns it on and off, I still think they're not giving Ole Gunnar Solskjaer the fair crack of the whip that he deserves. So, it is all going to depend on who these clubs bring in. And City, as we said at the top of the show, you know, with Pep saying we're going to strengthen, if they get a couple of signings, then it's going to be huge for everyone else.
Mm. Are we, you talked about maybe a potentially quiet summer, and that's, I've spoken to a couple of scouts who've said exactly the same thing. But if there is a big move, where's it going to come?
Well, it's very interesting to hear Mbappe at the French Player of the Year Awards on Sunday night saying that he wanted a new challenge, and you can understand why he might as well. He's apart from the fact he probably wants some more money, he's a World Cup winner, and he's done everything there is to do in French football in what's a one club league. It will be interesting to see if the Premier League, which has not, despite all its strength, and this year in particular, it's incredibly strong, the Premier League clubs, they haven't tended to sign the very best players in the world for some years now. It's not happened. The absolute A-list players at their peak don't tend to come here that often. So it'll be interesting to see whether anyone from England signs Mbappe. But if they do, you'd think it would be more likely to be Manchester City. And then the gap we were talking about at the top of the show could get even bigger, because he really is special.
Yeah.
Unless there's a certain Frenchman taking over any of the big clubs somewhere on the continent who might be able to lure him as well. I mean, can you imagine Hazard and Mbappe playing for Zidane at Real Madrid? Mm,
They're going to be big changes there, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think he'll want at least two huge signings. Obviously, Bale
has it going to go. Isn't it?
Hazard's going to go. Yeah, I mean, he's just waiting for the clubs to.
I really feel for Gareth Bale, because he's someone who's achieved fantastic things at Madrid. Deserves better than just be thrown out with the rubbish.
Deserves far better than he's getting. Deserves far better than he's got from Real Madrid fans over the years. I mean, this whole thing about, they've not taken to him in the same way that they took to Jonathan Woodgate, because Woodgate learned to speak Spanish pretty quickly and Bale hasn't. I mean, look at Sergio Aguero. You know, his English isn't great. He'll speak a little bit of it, but it doesn't always do his interviews in English. He's been here now, I think, longer than Bale's been in Spain, and yet does that detract from the way that any of us...
It possibly does, doesn't it, though? Because Aguero is not one of the bigger... You know, for a long while, he was never getting in the PFA team of the year. His profile was your profile was slightly less in that in terms of that. I think.
I don't. But he's not had the same hankies waved at him, though, has he?
Oh no. City fans certainly have been very much. Yeah. And Bale. I mean, the goal I've never seen such a great goal scored in a big game as Bale's goal against Liverpool last year in a Champions League final. The technique involved in that, it gets very easily forgotten, doesn't it, how outstanding that was. Zidane's clearly got an issue with him. The fact is that Real Madrid have not got as much money to spend as we often think they have. They're not that, they're not particularly wealthy at the moment, and they've got a player there who's earning £600,000-£700,000 a week, and the manager, for whatever reason and however harsh it may seem, doesn't fancy him. So therefore, they're going to try and move heaven and earth to get rid of him off the wage bill.
Bale's got
3 years. Bale loves his lifestyle out there. He loves his, as they always say, loves his golf, loves the weather, loves everything about it. So why should he have to leave? So. Yeah, interesting.
And if things don't work out, I mean, look, you've got to imagine things will work out okay for Zidane. But if they didn't, it could be a year down the line, and they decide there's another change needed. It's not exactly the most stable of clubs when it comes to keeping hold of managers.
Barca are going to strengthen, aren't they? So therefore, it's not that easy a job necessarily for Zidane. If he doesn't win the Champions League next year, and you can always slip up in the Champions League, you've got Barca who are going to strengthen from where they are. It's easy next year. Zidane could be out of there again.
Bale's got a clean slate.
In terms of real politics, though, the likelihood is that he'll come probably back to England. You know, Chelsea have been mentioned, Spurs. You know, there's always been Manchester United talk, with basically Madrid funding most of the wages.
Yeah, but I struggle to see where he fits in, really. I did a column on him a couple of weeks ago, and I think the best move for him would be Bayern or a club like that if they came. I mean, you know, if he comes to Chelsea replacing Hazard, there'd be a huge amount of pressure on him. Mm. Is United, it's not the prospect that it was, and again there'd be huge pressure on him. I would, if I were him, I'd be awfully tempted to sit tight for 1 year at least and see what happened. I don't.
Does he end up getting loaned to Bayern for a year? I think Bayern's a really interesting shout. With Robin and Ribery both left, haven't they?
Yes.
So it's, you know, there's an obvious, seems like an obvious vacancy there. It's, you know, it's that club that could afford to pay a lot of those wages. It might be an option for him.
Mm. Let's sort of look then at our team of the year, in goal. My choice probably would be Alisson, although, you know, Edison's had a fantastic impact at City, simply because, you know, he was the, you know, proverbial last piece of the jigsaw, wasn't he, at Liverpool. What do you guys think?
Yeah, they're both outstanding and they're both modern goalkeepers, and Alisson's made that impact. Edison's save at the start of the cup final, you know, I'm not saying it would have been a completely different story, but it certainly wouldn't have been the romp that it became if he hadn't made that, you know, come out and made that save from Pereira towards the start of it. So I do also think Lucas Fabianski has been absolutely outstanding for West Ham. And, you know, he's had probably a lot more to do than the other two.
Yeah.
And I think as a guy who always looked like he wasn't top drawer at Arsenal, I think he now looks like sort of a top six goalkeeper, really, Fabianski. But if I'm going to have to pick one, and then I'll go Edison.
Yeah, I'd go Edison as well. It's the toss of a coin. But I still think, despite his problems this season, if I had carte blanche to sign any goalkeeper for my club, I'd go De Gea over Alisson and Edison, even now.
What, on the principle that class is permanent?
Yeah, I just think I just don't think there's a better goalkeeper on the planet when they're all at the top of the game.
Mm. I'll give you back four. But I'll give you three Liverpool players in that back four to start off with: Alexander Arnold, Van Dijk, and Robertson.
It's difficult to argue against those three, I think. Those three almost.
So who's the odd man? Who's the extra one?
Probably Laporte, but I see he's one or two slightly dodgy. I think he was poor against Spurs in the great Champions League quarter-final. But generally, Laporte's been very, very good. So we'd probably go for him.
Yeah, Laporte would be my man.
I'd like Diop at West Ham.
Yeah, very good signing. And you do expect him to go on to maybe a top six club at some stage. I think Laporte, although, you know, what's been interesting is if you're going on like the last month, company storms into that team still, doesn't he? You know, if you can imagine Van Dijk and company next to each other at the height of their careers, what a back pairing that is.
Mm. As you say, at the height of their careers. Yeah. Midfield, we talked about Bernardo Silva.
Mm. Depends how you're going to set this up. You often, when you're doing these fantasy teams, you don't set them up quite as you would in an actual game of football.
If you're going to have a DM, it would be Rice for me.
Yeah, Declan Rice would be. It's funny, West Ham only finished 10th, I think, but we mentioned three of their players already. But Rice, I think Rice has been a game changer for England. I think England were desperate for a player of exactly his profile. So it was a massive boost to Southgate when he threw his lot in with England and left Ireland. I think that was massive, because the one thing I thought they were lacking was a top holding midfield player, and Rice is that. So yeah, I think Rice is he is and will be, you know, the outstanding English midfield player, going forward.
Yeah, I think he's brilliant, and I think, you know, look, I know Raheem Sterling got the Young Player of the Year, but if we talk about it as the Young Player of the Year should be, then Declan Rice,
it was
his breakthrough.
They've got to change the age of that award, haven't they?
Or limit it to, you know, you can only have made certain so many games, appearances or something like that. But I still, you know, look, if we're here, we're picking the team of the season, I still think Fernandinho gets in ahead of Rice in that holding midfield role.
Missed a lot of the second half of the season, didn't he? Otherwise, I'd agree, but maybe I'd go for Rice. Yeah.
Mm. And in terms of attacking midfield players?
Where are we going to go with this? Where's Bernardo Silva going to play? As he's got to be in there.
I think 4-1-4-1 makes it a lot easier.
That's probably true.
Bernardo Silva has to be in there. Salah has to be in there. Sterling has to be in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I mean, I agree with all three of those.
Hazard? Where would you put Hazard?
Yeah, it's funny because you haven't necessarily got an absolutely outstanding number, like proper number nine this year, given Kane's missed a lot of football. probably Aguero gets in there still, doesn't he? I suppose if you're going to have a proper number nine.
Yeah.
And you've always got too many wingers. I don't know. It's not. I mean, they'd still be a decent team, wouldn't they? But you'd want to get Bernardo Silva, Sterling, Hazard and Salah all in there. And one of those guys has got to give, so...
Give someone a floating role, but
he'll be a jumpers for goalposts.
What's interesting for me when you look at the number nine? I mean, I would Aguero would be the man for me to get it, but Aubameyang's scored a lot of goals.
Really has.
But he probably should have scored more, and in a better side would have done. But I think on balance of this season, you're just squeezing Aguero in there.
Okay, let's sort of pull this all together now and look towards next season. What's your one wish for next season?
I'd love to see... what I'd really love to see is a Leicester or a Wolves battering it down. Solskjaer said he thinks United might... In a moment of sort of over-honesty, we're going to struggle to finish top six next season, he basically said, didn't he, Solskjaer, a few weeks ago? And I agree with him. I'd like to see a Wolves or a Leicester or anyone, really, from outside the top six. Because one disappointment about when after Leicester won the title, you thought more teams are going to... believe in it and go for it. Not just winning, not obviously winning the title might be outlandish, but to believe they can break into the top six and finish top six. And no one else has even looked remotely like doing it, really. Even this year, they were a long way back. But I think Wolves and Leicester in particular, if I had United, I would rather be starting this summer with Wolves or Leicester squad and work on that than Manchester United squad. So therefore, you would hope they might sort of go for at least top six, and if not top four, that would be good.
And I think with Brendan Rodgers, given the fact that he's going to have the pre-season to work with them this year, what he's achieved with that Leicester side in the last few weeks suggests that they will do well. But yeah,
if the wire goes, then you're starting rebuilding again, aren't you?
So, I think just more competition for me, a more competitive Premier League. Yeah. Because I do think, as Dave says, there's so many teams who don't go for it against, we go to cover games and you know what you're going to write. It's very, very rare now you come away thinking, I've just been shown something that I didn't think would happen today. Yeah.
City scored 169 goals in the season in all competitions. They've scored, this is not just Premier League, but they scored... six goals on eight occasions and five goals on three more occasions. And really, there's too many non-competitive games, particularly involving City.
Yeah. Well, this isn't going to happen, sadly. But for me, the game has got to stop holding fans to ransom. Club owners and the governing bodies are taking them for granted. They'll regret their greed and ignorance in the long run. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.